the presentation today is called The Unitarian Way. And The Unitarian Way is actually a sermon written by the Reverend Brian Kiley, who's the minister of the Unitarian Church of Edmonton. In this sermon, he discusses the roots and the nature of Unitarianism. Although Brian Kiley is not here in person today, we will still have the opportunity to hear his words and his thoughts. A member of our fellowship, Victor Lau, will read the sermon for us. Victor was born in Regina, has been a member of the fellowship for about 3 years. He's a strong unionist and an advocate for workers. He's the former leader of the Saskatchewan Green Party and a strong voice for guaranteed income. Victor and his wife Heather have 3 children, 3 dogs, and their own business. So, Victor, I'll take these things with me.
Hopefully I won't spill water on the candles. When I first got this sermon handed to me, it was from Joanne, many of you know. It was really interesting when I wasn't sure about actually presenting it, but when I read through it, I definitely thought this is well worth presenting. And what I found really interesting that it was she bought the sermon, and it was basically presented on August 22nd, 1999. And if any of you remember 1999, it was the year that, the clocks were going to change over on the computers and everything was going to crash. And I remember having my new Macintosh and I thought, I got to stay up just in case, see what happens. And of course, thing clicked over. Nothing happened, right? So a lot of, I think, computer technicians got away with a lot of servicing there. Anyway, I'm going to read some of it. I've summarized the beginning, and then we're going to go through some. And if people have questions, certainly feel free to interrupt. But maybe we could have some Q&A afterwards. This is in his own words. He wrote, "Some time ago, I was interviewed by a 10-year-old boy from an elementary school. His teacher had assigned the class a project in which each would study a different religion of the world. Somehow, he had come up with Unitarianism. Many of his questions were easy. Do we have any important symbols?" he asked. "Yes," I said, and told him about the flaming chalice and its various meanings, how it symbolizes the light of knowledge as we Unitarians keep searching for the truth in an ever-changing world, how it reminds us of the human need for community and mutual support like a campfire, and how the flame in many cultures reminds people that there is always reason for hope, no matter how ominous the world seems. All in all, the interview with this young man was a lot of fun. I enjoy talking about our faith, finding ways to speak of it so that it comes alive and is yet understandable. I enjoy it, but then I've had a lot of practice over the years. I've spoken with genuinely interested newcomers who hunger for more information and deeper understanding so that they can feel more a part of this place. I've stated our case for suspicious skeptics who are wary of all organized religion, and I have stood my ground before those who are imprisoned by their own beliefs, viewing any deviation from their established norms as weird at best and evil at worst. From me, you will hear no absolute pronouncements on what you must or must not do. We are a gathering of free thinkers, seekers of religious truth, a group of people who hold that our own powers of reason and our own intuition will define what we shall believe. Being creedless makes us a bit hard to describe. In fact, the one question most Unitarians dread is, what is a Unitarian? And the Reverend basically goes back to a little green pamphlet that talks about the congregation and the beliefs entitled Our Common Beliefs. And he has about, 6 points under that. The first point, we affirm the worth of all human beings. This is based on the first statement in the Unitarian Universalist Principles we read earlier. It is the closest we come to a golden rule, and I think it is an improvement on that rule. If we truly accord people a natural worthiness, then we will also give them respect. We will treat them as we would have them treat us. We will find peaceful ways to negotiate our differences. We will not dismiss anyone. Disagree, yes. Dismiss, no. This is a dangerous statement. With all the diversity in the world, affirming this principle means that we accept the validity of people with different customs, different gods, different understandings of the world. The implication is that there are many truths in the world, and we are pledging to respect the importance of those truths instead of insisting that everyone believe as we do. This leads to the second comment in the brochure. We hold that a basic principle of our Unitarian movement is freedom of belief. We do not require assent to any creed or statement of faith before a person can join us. We hold that all persons have an obligation to seek out truth and to follow that truth. As a child, I was taught to believe that my non-Unitarian religion was the only true path to God, and that if I broke the rules of my religion, I would be damned. I was also taught that anyone who is not of my faith would not get to heaven. As I grew older, I realized that these beliefs meant God was about to condemn the large majority of very good people to hell, or at least not let them into heaven, simply because they were not of my faith. Something about that seemed unutterably wrong to me, and while I did not know it at the time, those thoughts started me down the slippery slope towards Unitarianism. In this religion, most believe that there is no one right religious expression, and so we make no insistence that each of us hold the same beliefs. God can be approached in many ways. UU minister George Marshall wrote, "There are a multitude of beliefs held by us because there is no set dogma or doctrine. It is probable that there are some Unitarian Universalists who believe in the type of jealous, nationalist God of the Old Testament, and some who believe in the loving Father of Jesus concept. Some would agree with Jesus. God is love. Others would join with Gandhi in saying God is truth. Others join scientists in saying God is the first cause, or with the philosophers in calling God the center of focus in the universe. Others define God as an integrating force, that which makes meaning in our experience, that which makes sense out of life, the power of good, etc. Generally speaking, UUs find God within the natural order, not outside of it. God becomes a natural force rather than supernatural. Number three, we reject the idea that a book or institution is superior to the conscience and intellect of a responsible human being. Your spiritual well-being is yours to determine. The principle of religious freedom extends in Unitarianism right down to each individual. The word religion literally means to tie up. It is the set of beliefs and assumptions we use to bind our understandings of reality together. Last week, John Fritz spoke of the interaction between perception, self, and reality, how each influences the other. No two people will have exactly the same understanding of reality. So, too, will no two people have exactly the same way of tying together their reality. To say it another way, no two people will have exactly the same religion. Unitarians believe that a religious understanding comes from each person's own direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder. That is the divine. We hold that this experience is open to anyone. It need not be mediated by priests or ministers, nor by prophets and mystics long since dead. We believe that we can interact with the divine presence, the ultimate truth, the guiding principle of love every day in new and fresh ways, and we can learn from the interaction. An old and glorious statement of this principle is that revelation is not sealed. We also hold that it is the right of every person to synthesize their beliefs using an ongoing dialectic process, where we take experience, ponder it critically with our abilities to reason and intuit, and then formulate or perhaps reformulate a belief. One of our early ministers spoke of religion as being, quote, life passed through the fire of thought, end quote. We take our experiences, our feelings, and examine them critically. It is not enough to believe for the sake of believing. Unitarians are challenged to test their beliefs in the annealing fire of the intellect and in the purifying flame of conscience, and we are expected to alter those beliefs if they come up wanting. It is a never-ending process of searching for the truth. Number four, we exist to offer a warm, open, supportive community. We look to each other for intellectual stimulation and moral support. As far back as human memory goes, people have gathered in communities to celebrate rites of passage, to share rituals that brought people together with each other and with their gods, to share joy with one another in good times, to console and comfort one another in bad times. Nothing has changed. We human beings still need our communities of support and hope. We need to touch one another and find ways out of loneliness and isolation. Some of us find enough of this community in the family. Others find it in a wide variety of social institutions that run the gamut from sewing circles to sports teams to theater groups. Those of us who call ourselves Unitarian find a large measure of that community right here. There are a couple of important reasons for us to be here. One is that this is a liberal religious haven where we can reflect upon our own searches. In this place, we find people who respect our beliefs. They aren't family, they aren't the people at work. They are friends with whom we can talk freely. People who like us for who we are, who see us as worthwhile human beings. To them, we can speak of beliefs, trusting that we will not be dismissed. We find among them the freedom to pose the questions that trouble us and the opportunity to listen to ideas which can, at times, reassure us or challenge us or even turn us off completely. We can hear all of these ideas knowing that we will be the final arbiters of whether or not to accept them. Together, we strive to make this a safe place for working on our individual understandings of religion. Number five, we seek to act as a moral force in the world, believing that ethical living is the supreme witness of religion. Ethical living is the supreme witness of religion. That is true in Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, Islam. There is one thing that sets us apart, however. In most religious traditions, the ethically lived life leads to a promise of a better afterlife. As Unitarians, we are decidedly undecided about an afterlife. Some believe, some don't. I'm of the agnostic school that says, I'll find out when I get there. What this means is that we are a religion firmly planted in this world. We make no bets on another life, so we have to make the best of this one. Our only salvation is to live morally and ethically, to try our best to improve the world we have inherited. Unitarians have a proud tradition of having an impact on society far greater than our numbers would suggest. We are often leaders in movements for social change. It was interesting when, a year ago, people at a social justice forum listed all the organizations in which they were involved. There was everything represented from anti-violence, to elder care, to Right to Die, from Amnesty International to literacy campaigns. Unitarians care and are involved. We are often among the first to speak out in our communities and accept positions in municipal organizations. We even have a Unitarian MLA sitting in Victoria. This is a part of our religious lives. We are people who accept responsibility for the well-being of the community, just as we accept the responsibility to manage our religious beliefs and spiritual well-being. No one else will do it for us. Well, all of this responsibility can be exhausting, especially if you add in families and inconvenient time eaters like jobs. So it pleases me that the final passage in our pamphlet holds a little forgiveness. Number six, we know we often fail to live up to these ideals, but unite in the hope that working together we may come closer to realizing them. No Unitarian church is a perfect place, but it is a place where we have found a religious home. It is where we come to rest and recharge and get ready for the world again. It is a place where we come to ponder what it means to live a principled life and to wrestle with the challenges that are a part of each of our lives. It is a place where we come to find friendship and warmth, where we come to sing and celebrate. Each of us finally comes from our own private reasons and takes away a gift that suits us especially. So as a final thought, let me offer this. When someone asks you what Unitarianism is, don't worry so much about the pamphlets or the exact words. Instead, I invite you to begin by telling them what it is you find in this place that keeps you coming back. It may be as complex as a theological idea or as simple as the contact with a good friend at coffee hour. If it is what draws you back to this place, then it is as true a statement about Unitarianism as any I have made today. Yeah. Questions? Someone's clapping. Yeah, I thought it was really, considering it was 99, it was quite timely kind of thing. So, we got a question.
Okay.
Or a comment, perhaps.
comment. I'll remind the fellowship that several years ago I did a presentation called Intolerance as a Virtue, a Challenge to the First Principle, where I spoke against radical Islam and the behaviors that result from that, that they are you can't respect it nor tolerate such things. But generally, of course, it does make sense. This is what we're striving for.
Yeah, on that, I would say that, you know, like part of it is always searching for truth. So, you know, say a barbaric practice, and I'll just pick one, genital mutilation, you know, prevalent in Africa on females. Is that a truth we would accept as Unitarians? I think if we look pretty... not even too deeply, I think most of us would reject that, if not all of us. So, you know, I think there is, you know, obviously within the set of practices, limits to what we would tolerate or you know, support, certainly. So,
That was an interesting presentation that he made. Thanks for delivering it. There are two or three things I found rather troubling. The first was what Alan said, but this first point seemed to be that respecting a person is respecting their beliefs. I don't think that's true. Otherwise, all beliefs are relative, and that certainly is not true. Certain religions, such as Islam, are causing havoc in the world because of the religion. Secondly, God can be approached in many ways. Well, that's assuming there's a God. So we frame the whole second point in terms of God, which, you know, doesn't speak to me at all. The third one is religion is how we organize our thinking about our lives. And I don't agree that that's what religion is at all. I think religion is a mystification, and I don't think it helps us organize our lives at all. For me anyway, that's my thought. So, yeah, not super comfy with that presentation as it went. Thank you.
Yeah, interesting.
Okay, third point. Third point Brian appeared to make was that I think he said literally that religion is a way that we organize our thinking about our lives, and that doesn't speak to me at all. I think religion doesn't do that for most people. It just mystifies life, gives them false hope. You know, I'm going to go to a funeral in 2 weeks for my uncle and hear all about religion and all about, you know, heaven and all this crap. Sorry.
Yeah, it's interesting. I come from as a young child, I can remember being, you know, I think it was in the 70s I grew up in, right? And you know, it was always, there was a few faiths, actually a lot more faiths back then that would try and drag you to, you know, the pews kind of thing. And I went to a few, and I remember, you know, just falling asleep at the back. And it was just, you know, just didn't take it very seriously. And you know, like Sandra mentioned, I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago, I joined up with this congregation. And, you know, it's weird. They say in politics and possibly in life, you know, if you start on one end of the spectrum, as you grow older, you go to the other end. So maybe that's just how, if you started religious, maybe as you grow older, you become less so in some cases. I certainly didn't have any, you know, faith in a higher power or anything like that. But as I'm now in my mid-40s, and I, you know, I feel spiritual. I don't try and be dogmatic or doctrine about it. I like what Joe Thauberger said, I think it was several months ago, possibly even last year, but we had a meeting downstairs, and, you know, got into, you know, God versus no God, that kind of stuff, and I like what Joe had to say. He says, well, I personally believe there is no God, but I have no problem with other people that believe there is a God, right? And that's where I'm at. I'm like, well, I have a lot of friends that are actually atheists, many friends, and I respect that. I don't know what the truth is. I find comfort in knowing that there may be something out there, something bigger than all of us. I certainly know that in my own practice and life, when you have all the comfort goods that you want, and I think it's Maslow's hierarchy, the only way you can get to the next level of euphoria or joy is to basically do something bigger than yourself, right? You know, it's not getting a nicer car, bigger home, more money in the bank. That will, you'll be stuck on that plateau. It's doing something greater for the common good, something larger. And you know, I've seen so much good. If you guys ever get a chance, I'll end here, but if you go to the Canadian Museum of Human Rights in Winnipeg, there are lots of people, you know, notated down there that have tried to strive for something bigger than themselves. And it's just so heartwarming going level to level, you know, just yeah, it was just astounding. So, yeah. Sorry. Anyway, there's something over there.
Okay. Actually, I have the mic.
Yeah, sorry, Sandra.
Yeah. Something that really struck me as you were speaking, I really appreciate the words of Brian Kiley. Mm-hmm. And although I can find some little things that I differ on here and there, one of the things that just jumped out at me that I appreciated so much was that respect for the individual spiritual journey is one of the highest priorities, and that we expect our thoughts and understandings to change and evolve. And I just thought how welcoming that is to me, because reality seems to me to be like that. And I have been very glad to be part of a congregation and a religion that allows for that. Anyway, I also am glad that we have time for, you know, to hear other people's thoughts on this.
Yeah, that was really good.
I've had the privilege of talking with Brian several times, and I know that he has a great respect for political awareness. And as I think about the tensions in the world today, and especially in the Middle East, I think that a political analysis of what has happened is important. Let's face it, the West invaded Islam, you know, back in the Crusades, and look at the awful things that happened in Spain, you know, when the Catholic Church took over there. Ray Cleveland's class about the Middle East definitely is slanted in the direction that the West, and especially the United States, has obliterated the cultures and the beliefs of those people, and that there is a natural political hate that develops for everything that's happened. And it's not just what's happening now, but the Ottoman Empire was completely ripped apart by France and England and the U.S. And so you can imagine being a Muslim, living in that part of the world, and looking at the history of what's happened to them. And we certainly don't like what ISIS is doing, but it has to be looked at in a context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
Thank you. Sandra mentioned that it's an evolutionary journey, the business of life and religion and so on. I'm just wondering, it's been a few years since Brian wrote that sermon. Mm-hmm. Did you check in with him to see where he is at right now, to see if he's...
It would be, no, I didn't get a chance. It would be actually really interesting to see if he's, once again, that's 99, so that's almost 16 some years, whether he's evolved, changed, maybe his thought process on, you know, what he wrote way back then. It's when I read it, it felt so timeless for me. Like, you know, even though it's been like 16 years, it really appealed to me as a Unitarian that it was very broad, it was very open. And I don't think, I hope that, you know, that even though he is obviously very strong in his viewpoints on defending, you know, each of the points, I think he... I haven't met him. It sounds like you have. But, you know, I think he's a very open fellow. I don't think he, you know, I don't know if he would be, you know, very, you know, angered if someone said, well, I totally disagree with that. Well, he'd probably say, yes, that's part of the whole thing.
And know. No, he wouldn't be angry. And yes, there are lots of people here who know him very well. I really enjoyed his presentation. Thank you for reading it.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it was really good.
We've got lots of time.
I'll be fast. I think one of the things that I really struggle with, and I have I still don't know how I feel about a lot of issues, is that where is tolerance? And where is intolerance? And, you know, I do not believe in any sort of God or any sort of it, but I am Christian because I've been raised in a Christian society. And so therefore I look at the world through that prism. And because of that, I find things in other cultures either something to be admired or something that I find very abhorrent. And actually, you know, genital mutilation. We've had discussions about that with various friends, and that's just one small topic that I find so abhorrent. But actually, I know that in some cultures, it is a very important part of the culture. And, you know, I feel like, who am I to say that that's wrong? I don't know. You know, in my being, I feel that it is wrong. That's a terrible thing to do. And that's just one example. And then I don't know how, where I have the right to say, I really think that that is something very evil. When it comes to murder, yes, you know. But, I often find myself really questioning, like, am I being ethnocentric? Or is this something that's really... Anyway, thank you.
I'll just throw in just quick comments on two things I thought of in terms of is how I deal with tolerance. Generally speaking, would be one: does the practice bring more people together than it pushes apart? Right? Because I think part of being a human or a part of humanity is to come together. At least in some times. I mean, we all need our individual practices and space, but you know, collectively we can do more than we can as individuals. And secondly, I think it's a Wiccan creed. You know, the idea of, you know, your practice should be if you wish to do a certain practice, as long as it doesn't harm others, that's fine, right? And so, you know, I think looking at things, even though it may have been practiced for a long time, if it's actually harming other people, you know, even though, yeah, and it probably genital mutilation has been going on for many, many years, but it's come to a point where, you know, people around the world are starting to say this is not right, and we're going to start pushing potentially for laws to change it. And I would look at something as simple as gay marriage, which really, when I came to this issue, you know, being awakened to gay lesbian rights, I was always astounded how much violence was involved towards something so simple as two people wanting to marry, you know, two people of the same sex. And you know, now we have to the point where, you know, in the last 5 years, it's literally spread around the world where you know, governments are starting to recognize this right and just basically pass it into law. So, you know, over time, what has been accepted for possibly even two generations suddenly no longer becomes common practice and is seen to be, you know, a bigoted way of being. So I think over time, I don't get too hung up in terms of, you know, well, we've been practicing this for, you know, many, many years. I just think if it's harming somebody and it isn't really bringing people together, it's actually tearing them apart, I think then it's time to relook at changing that. So,
I would like to comment on what Donna said, and I think that the really important issue is choice. Mm-hmm. On Friday, I went to a presentation by a Muslim woman at the University of Regina, and she was talking about the number of women who are choosing to wear the hijab. Mm-hmm. And issue of genital mutilation, if people choose to do that, to have that done to them, mm-hmm. that's one thing.
Right.
But and I'm sure that in the situations in which it happens, there's probably a lot of pressure, which mm-hmm. makes the choice a little bit iffy. Mm-hmm. But I think that the issue which concerns me is that people have the choice to do things that are not harming either themselves or other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about it, and I have some problems with the countries that ban the hijab,
mm-hmm. yeah,
or ban, you know, people wearing a cross, because I think that people should have a right to show what their religious affiliation is, if that's okay not harming either themselves or anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I think choice is a big issue.
Yeah. No, that's actually a really good point. And we, if anyone was watching the last Quebec election, where the so-called corrupt Liberals won power again and brought down the PQ. The PQ was led by Pauline Marois, and they had won amazing victory 4 years earlier. But then they were heading into the general election campaigning on banning religious symbols. And I listened to the CBC radio talk show with all these people, you know, from across the country as well as in Quebec talking about this. And it was really interesting where a Sikh emergency room surgeon came on and he said, this law you're talking about would basically forbid me from practicing my faith. And here you are demanding more and more healthcare workers. I would not be able to live and practice here in this province because I'm not giving up my personal religion. And it was really interesting that there was a young woman, very progressive, a young university student, and she was 100% behind this. You know, after he said that, she said, well, if it means you leave, that's fine with me. And I thought, wow, like, you see how there was such a divide. And I think, you know, when people were given that choice between a potentially, you know, continuance of corruption government and this government that would, you know, this was one of their big legislative pieces that they were going to implement, they said, sorry, you're going to have to go, kind of thing. And yeah, but it was really an interesting debate, just hearing not even hostility, but the strong viewpoints in the radio talk show. So, yeah.
Cool. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to comment about Donna's question. It's an interesting question about moral relativism and do we want to support it or not. One way of looking at it is, do we want it in our culture? And if we don't have genital mutilation in our culture, do we want that? If we don't have girls and boys forced to sit in different parts of the building, do we want that? You know, and on and on. I mean, you have to think, is this something that I culturally want in my society? At least it's one way of thinking, and you'll decide whether you want it. There's no right answer, in a way, but there certainly are answers. My in-laws were in a class in university where children were swimming together, and some Muslim parents objected to that, and the class was broken up, so girls and boys didn't swim together. So religion is now trumping what? Feminism is now trumping democracy. Like, we have to, and there are going to be conflicting values in our society, and we have to make choices. And we have to exclude things we don't want or include things we think are valuable. That's my 2 cents worth.
Thank you all. I'm shocked that we have not only such good attendance, but such great questions. It was wonderful.
Thank you so much, Victor. Actually, you did such a good job of reading the sermon. In this congregation, a few years back, we had quite a few presentations like that, and those sermons are difficult to read because they're someone else's deep thoughts and words, and they're coming out of your mouth, and actually you made it meaningful. And we have had a few times when you couldn't sort of figure out who was talking, you know. So anyway, thank you very much, Victor, and I just want to say how grateful I am to people who are willing to discuss topics that are sort of taboo but that matter a lot, and that when people have differing views on those topics, are willing to speak out, but also let others speak out. I think this is a hallmark of Unitarianism that I value very, very much.